Frank Eiler, tell us why you're seeking a fifth term.
Well, since we took the majority in Raleigh in 2010 and actually took office in 2011 for the first time in 140 years, we have accomplished a lot as far as lowering taxes, letting people keep their own money, as far as regulations on business, as far as regulation on people trying to build houses and build businesses. We help the economy create jobs. We don't create jobs, but we put the climate in place to create more jobs. And actually, our tax rate cuts have produced more dollars due to economic growth. And I don't quite think I'm through. So.
And this actually, the tax rate issue, North Carolina is now considered one of the more favorable states for corporate tax rates, for tax rates in general. Part of that tax rate revision had to do with expanding the services that were eligible for sales tax. And critics of that strategy say that becomes a tax on the poor. What do you say to that?
I say that if you're already having something done that involves parts, that you will now pay on the parts and the labor. If it does not involve parts, you won't have to pay on the labor, because we're only wanting businesses that were already charging tax to have to charge it. And it was a part of a package to lower everybody's taxes. As a matter of fact, speaking of the poor, we've raised the standard deduction from $6,000 for a couple filing jointly to $20,000. So the first $20,000, you pay zero tax. So that, to me, that's helping the poor a lot more than paying tax on getting your car fixed, you know.
The investment in new infrastructure and improvements to the port are already paying off in more business, as documented recently by the Star News. When you look at economic development, Brunswick County, it's the fastest growing county in the state. The poverty rate in Brunswick County is nearly 14%. Is there anything the state legislature could or should be doing to address those issues?
Well, I believe that the legislature has help create jobs, infrastructure, ports and highways and other modes of transportation, not only help people get from place to place, get to work easier, bring their goods in and ship their goods back out. It also helps companies decide to locate and to open up. And we've got a tremendous amount of what people call service companies. Publix is opening up at least one store, and we've got many businesses. I attended a ribbon cutting a couple of days ago at the Red Hare Brewery in Shallotte, which whoever heard of Shallotte, but now we have a craft brewery, you know. So I think we're attracting a lot of not just retirees, but families, and our growth in our schools actually suggests that too. We've got a $152 million bond issue to build more schools and more classrooms. So growth is across the board. Plus, retirees love it because of golf and beach, of course.
Pat Sykes, who is a current Brunswick County Commissioner, is challenging you for the Republican nomination for this seat. She's said that the galvanizing issue for her was Gen X, that she felt the state just didn't fund the necessary research and mitigation methods for that. You are co-chair of the House Select Committee for River Quality. So from your point of view, tell us about what you're doing on that issue and how you're working on the water quality issue.
Well, I haven't heard that from Ms. Sykes, but I suppose she did say that. The Gen X issue is something that we jumped on immediately last fall, and the speaker appointed our committee. We came up with a bill that passed in February, 116-0, to fund the most modern machine known to man to analyze the water. It got changed in the Senate and did not pass in the proper form, and actually did not pass. So we are working very hard on a compromise to get that machine and the staff passed in the short session. But state not doing enough. She may be talking about what was called DENER is now called Department of Environmental Quality, which is DEQ. And I agree that that we had let Chemours and we think others, not just Chemours, but we don't even know if there are others that are contributing to compounds in the water. But again, we're cracked down on Chemours since it became evident. Our Brunswick plant is showing tremendous single-digit results in parts per trillion for Gen X, and now we're interested in hundreds of more compounds just to see what is in there. This machine will not only tell us what we know to look for, it'll tell us what's in there that we should be looking for. And there was known and unknown compounds that we may need to look at. So hopefully this will be a big boost. There are machines like this, but they're older generation. This is the most modern. It's an ultra high resolution mass spectrometer. It takes me a while to remember the name of it. But that means it's the most modern they've got. We're trying to get that installed, and it's going to take a while to get the staff and the machine in place. But we wanted to start in February, but we'll start whenever we can get it passed.
How much, again, does it take to purchase a machine, an ultra-high-resolution mass spectrometer?
It's over $800,000 just for the machine, but the staff of five or six, including PhDs all the way down to technicians, is going to be another $1 million-plus. So about $2 million before you, at least $2 million additional to what. Now, DEQ had a $228 million budget per year. We thought they could do the job with that, but apparently that wasn't enough. But this will be a boost to that. And the state, that's a part of the executive branch. We fund them, but we don't do their job for them. And we hope they'll be doing their job a little bit more timely in the future for other compounds. But Gen X is under control to some degree. I know that the media, the newspapers like to say, the water is not safe, but it appears to be safe to drink. So at this point.
So are you saying that the Department of Environmental Quality wasn't really doing the job that it should have been doing?
It took them till last fall, I believe, before they issued the notice that they were going to lose their permit to put that in the water. It took them till last fall to actually do what they maybe should have done much earlier if they'd been watching for that. It took the media and a college professor and the media to bring it to their attention last year, and it took a while for them to react. And as of January 21st, we were in a meeting, and we were assured that they stopped Chemours. Now we've had a couple of, quote, accidental spills, which is not good. But, again, it seems to be the residual amount is very small at this point. There's the raw water and the finished water coming out of the Brunswick plant. It seems to be down 9 or 10 range of parts per trillion on a goal of getting below 140, as you know.
When you think about the DEQ's failure to kind of catch up to the Chemours issue and the regulation of some of these compounds, or at least telling people about them, where was the failure? I mean, is it kind of a systemic issue within that part of the government? Is it, why did they fail, and how will that be corrected?
It's hard for me, not being a scientist or an engineer, to know where the failure was. But like many bureaucracies, I believe they were looking over here when they should have been looking over there, that type of thing. Maybe their attention wasn't where it needed to be as far as the Cape Fear River or our rivers in general. And we always worry about air pollution and, to a great degree, water pollution. And they have different divisions handling both of those. But, divisions need to talk to each other, and we also, these permits need to be reviewed more often. I think that may have been one issue. The permit was issued since the 80s and was not monitored as closely as it should have been. What is it you're putting in the water?
Yeah. You, as co-chair of the House Select Committee for River Quality, you just received a report from researchers about new findings regarding not only Gen X but also other contaminants in the water. Can you tell us what you learned from that report?
Well, I've been becoming aware over the past year that there are many compounds that we need to look at. And there are private individuals, engineer here in Wilmington, private company is looking at 341 different compounds. UNCW is looking at different compounds. as well as DEQ and Cape Fear Public Utilities and Brunswick Public Utilities. So they're all doing their testing and for different compounds and hopefully sharing information so that that we'll know what's in there. And the first day I heard about this, from the very first day, I said, we need to know what's going in the water before it goes in, not after it goes in. And that's been my philosophy throughout this whole thing.
You've talked about schools, and there are a couple of issues recently that have come up around that. Charter schools, as we know, are exploding in the state. And supporters of that are excited about the freedom of choice and the ability to send their kids to the kind of school that they think would be best for their kids. Critics say, including people within the traditional public school system, say these schools are actually siphoning off funds from traditional public schools for a lot of reasons, partly because these charter schools don't have the same standards in terms of services they have to provide, like transportation and meals. And also, if a kid signs up for a charter school and then winds up going back to the public school, there's no kind of readjustment in the accounting process. Is there anything that the state legislature could or should be doing about kind of leveling that funding playing field?
Well, two things I can tell you. That the charter schools take less money per student than the traditional schools and normally do not get money if they're not busing, for busing, or money for cafeteria if they're not feeding. So normally they're actually leaving money in the traditional school system because it does go to the LEA, as it's called, the Local Education Administration. It does go there if it doesn't go to the charter school. So they're leaving money over there when the student is actually in the charter school. And so there's a case to be made that actually they're making money to some degree. However, and that's when the money follows the student. Now, I'm on a committee, a task force, headed by Senator Lee, for one, and Representative Horn, and we are looking at funding long-term in a simpler manner so that there's not 38 pots of money doled out. There may be five or six pots of money that everybody will understand what's going on. And we're also very cognizant of the lottery issue, not getting the amount that was promised, although that does go to specific things like buildings, capital, and to scholarships and universities and so forth. So that goes to different things, but still we need to get the fair share to education that's supposed to be there. And we've got a bill that will bring that back over a short period of time. So that's basically what we're working on, is simplifying the funding to everybody. And I want to improve all schools so there's a true choice. You know, same standards, same accountability, same funding when it's appropriate for the services provided.
Recently, we heard that North Carolina is still lagging when it comes to teacher pay and how appealing North Carolina is as a place for teachers to work. What's left for the state to do on that front?
Well, interesting enough, I was in a meeting 2 days ago. What day is this? Oh, Friday, yeah. I was in a meeting Wednesday where it was brought out that we're number 8 if you count the state's contribution only, but we're number 46 if you count state, local, and all the other monies that go into schools and teacher pay. So, again, the state is stepping up. We need a better plan for local folks to step up. And I brought up the issue in that committee. I said, how many of these states that we're comparing to actually have a local school tax on their property tax bill? In other words, in Brunswick particularly, we get a percentage of the property tax going to schools by contract with the commissioners, which is a great arrangement. But the amount that some of these folks get, I heard somebody in New York that their school tax alone was $12,000 a year for a couple. And that was on the bill as a school tax, you know, not just a percentage. So, again.
So you're saying that the lag on that front is really in the lap of the counties?
I think it's both. I think it's state and county. The state, again, we want to simplify and make more money available you know, and we are we're going 5%. The governor asked for 5%. I believe that's what we put in the budget, was already 5%. So, again, maybe we get some agreement on that type of thing. But my big three has always been teacher pay, teaching assistants, and the Teaching Fellows Program, which is a scholarship program for the high school seniors that go into teaching, which I thought was a disaster when we stopped it. It's now coming back in the last budget. I tried to amend the last 8 budgets trying to get it back in. Finally, last year, it's coming back a little bit. So I like the Teaching Fellows Program. Teacher pay is high, always been high on my list. And to make it equitable and make it logical as well as the amount that they get, you know.
What about school safety? Should teachers be armed?
School safety is a huge issue, and I don't go 100% either way. What I do say is that school resource officers are extremely important. We're lucky in Brunswick, immediately after Sandy Hook, we had them in every school. The state has helped with that. That funding is being stretched thin. We hope it's going to be beefed up short session the next 2 months. So next year they'll have plenty of funding or not get cut in their funding for SROs. There's a new position, school resource detective, which we just heard about in a presentation from Carteret County. And I found out that we actually have one of those people starting this week, started this week apparently. What that detective will do is coordinate all the information, or intel, as they say, of the clues coming in, the information that apparently in Florida, that was a failure, where they didn't, you know, connect the dots. This person will be in charge of connecting the dots, so we'll head things off. It's hard to know what you prevented that didn't happen, but I think that having the big black car out front, having the armed guard is fine. Now, if we want to talk about a program where well-trained, very few well-trained folks in the school, whether they be, you know, military, law enforcement types or whatever, or coaches or teachers, whoever, want to get trained in SRO training, which there is SRO training available, and then maybe we'll think about having school marshals, air marshals. But I'm not in favor of every teacher just being armed. I am in favor of hardening the school as far as access. And we talk about bulletproof glass and doors and so forth, and you know, doors that can be locked with pushing a button, a panic button. And we do have panic buttons in some of the schools. We do have door alarms where a light comes on when a door is left open, you know, outside, because the SRO can't be at every door, you know. And teachers have passes to get into buildings that they swipe to let their class in. So it's a multifaceted thing, and it's different from elementary to middle and high school. High school is a lot more freedom to move around, but they still need to have, you know, defensive measures like, you know, metal detectors maybe in high school and that type of thing. I'm not sure we need to pat down the kindergartners, but maybe the high schoolers we need to a little more because they got a lot more freedom to roam around. You know, you know, kindergarten through fifth grade, you go from place to place by classes, and the teacher's leading you and letting you in to different doors. So it's just different in every school. And I'm lucky I was able to be in schools in 13 and 14 and see what they do. And it's helped me a lot having that information and that base to go back to my committees and say, you know, this is what I saw. You know, I hear what you're saying, but here's what I saw. You know, so it was very empowering for me to be in schools and classrooms for some length of time back in 2013-14. And that was right after the SROs got put in 2013. So I've enjoyed learning more about schools and enjoyed advocating for my big three. And again, that's does that answer your question?
It does, yes, yes. Thinking about just how Raleigh works so much in the state legislature is about convincing fellow legislators that something, funding, for instance, for one particular area would actually benefit the whole state. It's making the case for that. And when I say that, I'm thinking about beaches and renourishment, shoreline stabilization. What part of the burden do you think the state should bear, being from a beach county? And how would you sell that to your fellow legislators?
Well, what we've already done as far as as funding, particularly for dredging the shallow draft inlets to help commercial and recreational fishermen, and recreational fishermen come from across the state and around the country from a long way away. And so we've got a dredging fund that was a 50-50 match with local funds. We made it a 2-to-1 match. We've got more money into that fund. We now want to make that fund for beach renourishment as well as dredging. That's a goal, and to be able to match funds for that. I put in a bill at the request of two of our towns for them to be able to come up with non-state money by having a prepared meals tax. This is in restaurants. Now, my opponent calls that necessities. To me, a meal and a drink in a restaurant is not the same as your groceries, okay? So anyway, that would be, and I think the tourists would pay a big chunk of that because they come down here with plenty of money and eat out more than the locals sometimes. So, but my opponent wants to do a sales tax across the board on everything. So, again, that's just a difference there. I try not to speak about the opposition, but the main thing is that there are ways to fund that, and if you match state funds, you got to have non-state funds to do the matching. So, and many towns have stepped up. I mean, look, Baldhead and has stepped up for their terminal groin. By the way, I helped get the terminal groin bill passed. Some strong objection a few years ago, so we protect our inlets and the ends of our islands, which are fluffing into the inlets and having to dredge every year instead of maybe every 5 or 10 years. Third Street at the east end of Ocean Isle Beach is now Front Row, if people didn't know that. And so over the years, First and Second Street are out in the water. So, and it's been some dangerous stuff out there, you know, obviously, when concrete breaks up and other things, rebar and all that. So they've had to really be careful about cleaning that up. But the main thing is that Third Street is Front Row down there, and it probably shouldn't be.
You are the chairman of the House Transportation Committee. What's on the docket next? Are there areas of focus that the Cape Fear region will see?
Yes. specific to our region, there's a very unusual project which connects two different states, South Carolina and North Carolina, down where their Highway 31 in South Carolina stops 4 miles short of the border, and it bypasses Myrtle Beach and so forth. We got a major project underway just in the study stage to try to study the corridors and so forth. It is the Carolina Bays Parkway to connect somewhere around Chilote to that interstate quality road. And that will be a boon both ways. So more people can leave, and more people can also get up here. So, if you want more people, some people, you know, but they do want to be able to go down and shop and at Myrtle Beach and so forth. So, I believe it will be a boon to that whole area. One of the first phone calls I got was from a developer who said, "Please get that road finished." And that was 8 years ago. So, that's a big one. As far as statewide, we've put tons of more money into the ports, as you mentioned. We put a lot more money into the ports have been let go for 20 years before that. We put a lot more money into resurfacing, into bridge repair. A lot of our bridges are not safe. We've had to put load limits on a lot of bridges that we, you know, until they get fixed. Basically, we can fund about 20% of the needs every year. In other words, we've got $20 billion worth of needs. We've got $4 billion to play with. Playway is not a good word to work with every year. So that's what we're looking at. There's some creative folks looking at concept called Build NC, which is going to be, we have something called Garvey bonds now. We borrow against federal money from the future and, you know, borrow it now. We finished I-140 almost 2 years ahead because Senator Raven figured out we needed to use Garvey bonds. So in 2019, we opened it in 2017. So, again, this will be like that, but it'll be state funds, not federal funds, you know, borrowing against future bonds and so forth. So it's an interesting concept, and it's just on the drawing board, you know, if it passes ever. Hopefully it will.
When you think about this job, certainly, there have to be things that you're proud of, and you've named a number of those things. There have to be elements of this job that are frustrating, too. What are some of those? I mean, when you thought about running again, was there ever a moment you thought, you know, I don't need that?
It's interesting. I guess I'm fortunate in many ways. I was retired when this came along, and I'd already volunteered for free to be the county chairman when the county chairman quit. And then when the representative resigned, they said, well, you're it. And so I never planned to be the guy out front. I planned to be the guy passing out the cards for everybody else, like I had for 50 years. So I was the guy that took off work and put the sign out and passed out the cards during election day. And there was one election day. I think this early voting, I know there's a lot of opinions both ways. It wears on candidates and candidates' supporters. I mean, all the 200 or 300 hours of voting instead of 13 hours.
Tell us what that's like for you. What does it mean? How does it change
well,
your...
Ms. Sykes and I were speaking at the polls the other day. I said, you know, this time next week, we'll be hoping this is over. we'll be wishing it was over. And I don't know if she feels that way, but she seemed to sort of agree to that. But the main thing is, I've been through several of them, and it does wear on you. And whether I was a party chairman or whether I'm a candidate, it's much easier to run against the other party when the party is united, you might say, because you've got more volunteers, and you're kind of on your own in a primary. So it's a little more nerve-wracking, but it's, you know, instead of you're kind of one-to-one instead of being on the same team, you know, and November is much more fun being on the same team. Yeah.
Did it surprise you that Pat Sykes decided to throw her hat in the ring?
Not really. She'd mentioned it before, and, she's free to, anybody with $207 can run for this. You know, if it's another job, it might be $1,500 to run because it's based on 1% of what they say is your salary. But anybody with $200 can run. She's done a lot of things for our part of the county. She's my commissioner in my district in the county. And she's a friend. We went to church together for a while. She sang in the choir. And, it's part of the system. And she has every right to run. Anybody does, you know. And I've heard all kinds of names thrown out in the past. And I've had primary every election except one. And so I'm used to primaries and I'm used to general elections.
Okay. You know? So then when people go to the polls during this May primary, What's the thing that you would like them to keep in mind about you? And I know that you're not denigrating Pat Sykes, but why are you a better choice?
Well, for right now, I've accumulated what they call seniority. And what that means, I've got chairmanships. Chairmen decide what bills get heard in their committees. The speaker decides what committee it goes to, and then the chairman decides which ones get heard. With input from the speaker sometimes, but again... But the chairmanship has got some control. Freshmen will not have any chairmanships. That's just the way it works. Freshmen does not have chairmanships. And so whichever freshman, we've got one in November, one now. And so I think Brunswick County will lose a lot of seniority. And not just that, but the relationship, convincing other people to, like you mentioned, I helped the speaker get elected speaker against five other guys. I've made friendships across the state on common issues. Representative McElrath in Carteret County and our coastal advocates. She's very strong on the funding we talked about. I depend on her. She's on the environmental side, and I'm on the transportation side, you might say. So I depend on her for a lot of that funding ideas. And education, I've got strong ties to the education chairman. The fact that the education chairman came down from Union County to talk to our folks about class size about 2 weeks before we did the bill that fixed the class size issue. And because my opponent doesn't talk about the fixed bill, just about the original bill, but that's fine. The relationships, I think, that I have and therefore Brunswick County has across the state. I brought people in to speak to our folks and... It's been interesting. That's probably one of the most rewarding parts. That and getting around the county and meeting the people. I moved here 20 years ago. I didn't know hardly anybody, and now I feel like I know all the mayors, council members, citizens in 13 towns. So it's been fun.
Representative Frank Eiler, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.